This week's show is sponsored by Whimsies by Wellness.
Do dogs experience time in the same way that we do? When you leave the room for 5 minutes, but you come back to find your dog looking at you like you've been gone for years, does it really feel like years to them?
Do they even have a concept of time? And if they do, what's going on in their brains to measure it?
Welcome to the Dog Scholar.
I found a study that looks at whether dogs have a biological body clock. And they looked at biological studies, physiological studies, and even genetic studies to try and understand how dogs regulate their bodies. They found that dogs have an internal molecular clock that they use to regulate their day. Genetic studies found that dogs even have core clock genes which activate biological processes depending on the time of day. For example, daylight might be perceived by the eye, which is then processed by the brain's master circadian clock, and those signals then get transmitted throughout the body to keep it in harmony with the environment. So dogs' physiology is definitely sensitive to the time of day, particularly over the course of a 24-hour period. Mm. Very similar to humans.
Yeah, it is.
How's your internal body clock?
I'm all over the place.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, stop saying that. I'm all over the place in general anyway, aren't I? You know what I mean?
So yeah. Maybe it does accurately reflect your time of day.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
My timekeeping's abysmal.
Is it? We know. We know. What are you saying? Is it for we know?
I was being polite.
Yeah. I think I'm
it's that bad. Your wife gave us a pre-warning when we started the project. Time waits for no man, as they say, except Jamie Perry. Yeah.
Sadly, it doesn't.
No, time doesn't wait for him. We do.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell you what, I get jet lag really badly. Yeah. So I think my body's quite sensitive to that. I was travelling in Kuala Lumpur and it took me days. And by the time I was almost better, I came back and then got jet lag all over again. Mm-hmm. It is awful. I would wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning and I'd have to get up and I'd start doing emails and stuff because I literally could not get back to sleep.
It's like someone's taken the sands of your biological clock and gone like that, isn't it?
Is.
It's all over the place and it's got to settle
it
back
is.
Into where you are.
I'm rubbish at sleeping at the best of times. I'm awful. Hey, do you reckon dogs get jet lag then?
Mine's never been to Kuala Lumpur, so I wouldn't know. I could kick his ass there sometimes, I tell you that. I'm back again.
an interesting one would be if you look at like cases from like prisoners of war, they completely lose track of time at the time where they're spent when they're in an enclosed environment, but they've got no access to dates and times and clocks and watches and sunsets.
Like solitary confinement,
you
mean? Yeah.
They've got no access to any of them things, including the sun and knowing when it's light or dark.
Because it's those time signals that your body then perceives. Yeah. So it messes up your circadian rhythms.
But it's similar to your dog, really, when they're living in your house with you, other than your walks that you take your dog on.
Yeah.
They're not fully aware of dates, times and you know, how it's slightly... You know, the light's slightly going down and it's getting a bit darker, or winter's coming and now it's earlier. So how much would they understand
it? I wonder whether those time of day signals are replaced by the light that they see outside the window and whether the artificial lights are on or off. So those time of day signals are just...
Come on, Jamie, he's busting.
Thank you.
See, we have to wait.
Honestly, it's going to be worth it. You're going to think, give him all the time in the world. That's really, really fascinating because I was just thinking back while you were talking there to when I was in hospital for a period of time, and my hospital, the window looked at a wall. It was lovely. Oh. The window looked at a wall.
Was it a pretty
wall? And you've just got the, not particularly.
Did it have a mural?
And you've just got the sterile sort of like internal environment of that hospital, and it throws you. You don't know what to, obviously you've got a phone there. So as a human, you can look at the phone. You don't know whether it's night, day, what time it is. And you just
lose. Like a casino.
Anything where you're sort of like locked indoors, anybody who's been in a hospital for a period of time where you're in an internal room and you haven't got that thing. But I was just thinking then to the amount of rescue centres where dogs are housed in internal kennels, internal shelters, where they don't have access to be able to use to see the daylight, to know whether it's sunshine or moon that's out there. And it is basically regulated for a lot. Yes, you go out and you go to the toilet or whatever, but when you're back into there, then you're regulated by the artificial human daylight and night by the lights. And I wonder from a welfare perspective, what the impact of that would be on the welfare of those dogs in comparison to other dogs that have actual visual access to daylight.
It's a good point.
Certainly those that are long-term members.
It is that regulation of your point. It is those time of day signals. And I know that I was joking about casinos, but what you find traditionally in casinos is they don't have external windows because they don't want you to know whether it's night or day or have any concept of how long you've been in there.
What you just said there, I think a dog's sense of time in that situation would rely on a number of associations, maybe keys jingling like someone's coming in. You know everything's going to go quiet when the mops come out and they mop in the corridor. Or, you know, maybe loads of little visual cues that that tell them.
But the natural light and the natural existence
of being involved in time is not there, not as apparent. Maybe
a bit like a solitary confinement prisoner, isn't it? Where you would, or if you wanted to, when you were saying about the military or something, I guess when you watch TV programs where you know anybody, they want to really, really confuse them, so you put a bag over them that basically removes that ability to know where you are and the timing of this, that, and the other.
And just to make clear, we don't think that all rescue centres are like Guantanamo. You know what I mean? They're still getting out.
Don't stick bags over your dog's head.
Please don't do that. But I guess it's a bit like that period between Christmas and New Year when nothing normal is on the telly and you have no concept what day it is, do you?
So you know, you've talked about circadian rhythm, but it's dead hard to fathom. We're so out of touch to how we once were and how we navigated the planet and so on and so forth. Literally, unless it was night and day, I can't think of without a watch and a phone. How the hell do we know what time even is and keeping track of things?
Part of it is like your body signalling to you. So, you know, if you generally have lunch at 12 o'clock, but if it's kind of like 10 past 12 and you haven't eaten yet, your tummy will start rumbling. So you'll guess like, oh, I think it's about lunchtime. This is usually when I eat. So I think that your body, because your body is in line with those things, there are certain indicators and certain cues that will tell you that. So, and there's absolutely no reason why it's not the same with dogs based on this data, based on these studies. Dogs have a circadian clock that governs their physiology over the course of a day as well. You know, and it might govern things like how much cortisol you have in your system, which you'll have more of in the morning rather than in the afternoon. They found that was the same with dogs as well. So, you know, there is this really important information about how time is signalled, how it affects your body, and how your body then signals to you what time of day it is.
There could be something in there with, you know, if cortisol spiking in the morning, obviously it's linked to stress or readiness for challenges. Maybe if you're in the kind of transitional phase where you're struggling with a dog with aggression or reactivity when you're out and about and you're waiting for, you know, your appointment with your trainer, maybe there's something in walking them a little bit later then instead of in the morning and maybe taking an edge off.
Yeah, possibly. And also what the best time of day is to take medication as well, you know. Based on your physiology, we know that cortisol affects your immune system. So, you know, it could well be that by understanding dogs' circadian rhythms better, we can identify when certain medications might be most effective, when they might be best off having an operation, and when they might recover better.
Even when to start training?
Yeah.
I just think, you know, listening to this and how dogs are, and have we talked before about dogs being living for the now, living for the moment, no regrets, no hopes, no necessarily just is as it is. And if they, you know, working in accordance with an internal body clock, but without being hampered by this external manufactured clock, the concept of time split into hours that we have. And you think, you know, when you look at dogs as having this beautiful freedom and this, you look with envy, you can just live, you can just get on with stuff, the adversity, and go through it and live and be. And yet we seem to be absolutely, you know, completely obsessed with restricting ourselves, you know, the concept of time. Would we be happy if we didn't have it? If we did just exist in a... But you have to have it because society won't function without it. And
only got 5 minutes, I'm going to be late.
This is it, you can't meet your deadlines. How do we arrange this, that and the other? We've lost the ability to just work in accordance with the daylight, the night time and natural, you know, natural rhythms that dogs undoubtedly still possess.
Ironically, we may well run out of time on this section. So although we've had a great...
Oh, you're not messing, you got to go somewhere.
Well, that study was really great for understanding a biological sense of time. I found a study that looked at dogs' psychological sense of time as well. So this study looked at whether dogs could discriminate between short and long periods of time passing. Now, they put 6 dogs in specially designed boxes that had lights and levers built in, and they were trained to press a particular lever in response to different durations of light. So it might have been if a light comes on for a short amount of time, you've got to press this lever. But if it's a long amount of time, then you've got to press this lever, and it tested to see whether the dogs could do it. Scientists wanted to see whether they could differentiate between that time frame or whether it was just the lights coming on and I can't tell the difference at all. They found the dogs were really good at telling the time between about 1 and 30 seconds, but they really struggled to tell time differences under a second. So it was quite a good study.
That's really interesting from a training perspective, yeah. Because, you know, I've always had an idea that dogs have a rudimentary understanding of time just through teaching stays. And what you generally find is like they're aware. If you make mistakes early on in your stays, and you're breaking your dog to reward, that just means releasing them. So you put your dog in a sit stay, you get a little bit of time, 10 seconds or so, and then go yes, and you reward your dog. If you keep training it like that, within that 10 seconds, your dog's gonna naturally break that stay, and that amount of time will elapse, give or take a few seconds, yeah. or whatever. But you're teaching your dog to break after a period of time. So I've always been aware that, you know, at least that at a lesser amount of time, that they are aware.
Yeah. I've always wondered whether dogs even have the kind of same sense of time over a lifetime that we do. I mean, when you think about it, for a dog, they go from puppyhood to senility, and to them, surely we don't age a day.
That's a weird concept to think about,
isn't it?
That's a weird concept.
We must be omnipresent to our dogs. It must be like, yeah, it's really weird for one of those magical elves to ever die, because usually, you know, for dogs, very few, thankfully, will experience our death. But we might have, you know, several dogs over a lifetime.
Wow,
isn't that?
Yeah, I mean,
blown your mind now.
Yeah, that is a weird concept to think about from a dog's perspective.
Yeah, I wonder, like, with time and how we see time, like when we're talking about there with a dog in a stationary position or a stay or whatever, we'd look at duration. If you were actually understand time in any way, shape or form, to what point? Where is the point where it is now not possible? Because if I understand time, then I'm perhaps have a concept to be able to understand my place in time. So can I understand the concept of my place in time in a future and my place in time in a past?
Mm. Oh, I can tell you exactly what point that is. 2.5 glasses of wine.
Fair enough.
And then you can't understand your concept of anything. But you just sort of like can bridge into the, like here we could have the, theoretically we could get this concept of time. But if we accept that, okay, a dog has an understanding of the concept of time, until when? Where do we start sort of like going, oh, hang on, this is getting a little bit beyond it now. Do you know what I mean? So
maybe it gets more and more rudimentary as time goes on. And they start relying more on maybe environmental cues, you know, like when they somehow know that you're coming home, maybe the certain noises, things, stuff starts happening, tea starts being made.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that comes more into play. What I have noticed is when you're teaching like stays, it can be difficult between 1 and say 3 minutes, sometimes to 5 minutes, where you're having to repeat and withhold rewards and get them back and get them to understand how to produce the reward for the stay. After that, do you find, Jamie, that it gets a lot easier to get long, drawn out periods of time after you get past that first?
Yeah, I don't think that necessarily, like my thought is, you absolutely agree with you, is the first thing. But the second thing is, I don't think that that's because the dog's understanding a concept of time. I think that's just because the dog's understanding a concept of do not move until released, you know, and that goes on and on until the signal comes for me to be released, rather than me thinking, I'm here for X amount of time. It's just, I'm here until the release.
Okay, well, we'll change the circumstances then. Think of sending your dog out for a retrieve. So if you send your dog out and on 100 metres every single time you stop them and then they get sticky feet, are they aware of the space and the distance they've covered, or are they aware of the time that's elapsed?
Oh.
I'd say that they're aware of the moment or the rough distance from setting off that they would anticipate.
So you go with
getting,
the space.
Getting a reward.
Yeah.
I'm saying that at this sort of distance would generally result in a reward. If it was mixed up, then you'd find them travelling to wherever the last one was, wouldn't it? You know, that I get it. I don't know that.
If you train, like we had Explo dogs a friend I work with, he used to work Explo dogs, and his dog, he took his dog on, and they never ever went past 100 metres. And wherever you went, if you sent that dog out, you get to 100 metres and do this. Same sort of thing. And you could change the environment as well.
Was it different for different speeds?
No, it was always the same speed. They got like grease weasel shit. Yeah, yeah.
But if it was really slow, then it might not go out as far if it was just basing it on time. But if it was super fast, then it might go further.
Another one is when you're teaching like your dog to recall and dropping them in a down.
Yeah.
And you know, if you do it in the same place, they will drop in the same place. But maybe then they can understand the distance between
context.
When you say them. Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting question though, isn't it?
It really is. And it made me wonder whether, you know, like for us, time seems to go really fast when you're having fun and it really drags when you're not. I wonder if that's the same with your dog. I wonder if it feels really quick when we're playing with them, but then when they're on their own, like sat in the crate and it's, you know, it's alone time, it's like, oh, okay, no one to play with now. Boring.
Not mine, mine are snoring.
I don't know.
This week's show is sponsored by Whimsies by Wellness. A good dental chew should be a win-win. Your dog gets a treat that they can take off to a corner and chew on, and you get a significant improvement in their breath and all-round oral health. The Whimsies alligator and toothbrush chews have been designed with unique shapes to help clean the small spaces between dog's teeth and ensure proper blood flow through the gums, all while your dog chews. Look out for Whimsies in pet stores or order online by clicking the link in the description.
So the third study looked at how animals' brains might keep track of time. Scientists made a computer model to mirror how the brain works, and they tested the model to see if it reflected how they'd seen animals register time in real life. And they found that the brain keeps track of how much neurons fire to register time, a bit like a sand timer, with activity in each brain cell being like a grain of sand that then collectively groups together to give a sense of time. Or a bit like filling up a glass with water. The more the neurons fire, the more water gets poured in. And that's how they think animals use brain cells to register time.
Yeah. Another interesting observation I've had with mine is, I don't know about you, Jay, but I feed my dogs. This is more to do with me, not my dogs. I feed my dogs at the same time every day, 2:30. Feed them at the same time every single day, and if 2 minutes have gone past 2:30, I'll like wincing like the, it's like, but there's no real way they can know that, you know. It's consistent even through the summer when it's, you know, when it's bright, or if it's really raining and it's darker, they will wince, and I'm maybe one of them gets it and the others don't, but they copy because the wincing happens. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
But there is something there. There is that they're consistent. I'll hear Charlotte sometimes go, oh, the dogs are wincing. I'll go, oh, yeah, it's feeding time. Yeah. And I'll know they'll get restless around the same time.
Well, I wonder if a routine gives a dog a frame of reference then to register time.
I guess so. It gives us all a frame of reference, doesn't it?
I wonder, just on that study, whether, given a sense of time is based on how much activity is going on in your brain, I wonder if that's why when you're excited, time goes faster because there's more activity happening. That it's, for a dog, I guess it's a high level of arousal, isn't it? So I wonder whether that theory explains why time feels different. Mm.
In which case, why when you're a kid does a year feel like 10 years, but when you're an adult, it flies by?
It could be when you're 10, 1 year is a tenth of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
Frame of reference again.
Oh, you're blowing my mind. There's too much to think about. There's too much to think about, isn't there?
At what point do you lose a perception of a sense of time and it stops becoming, oh, 1 minute is registered, 2 minutes is registered? And at what point does it then become a sequence of memories that you just remember the order of and you go, okay, that's my frame of reference for time?
A sort of like tangent from that.
I like a good tangent.
Have you ever woken up in the morning and thought, oh, it's probably about 8:08? And you look at your watch or your clock or whatever, and you turn and it's either there or thereabouts, 4 or 5 minutes either side of.
Yeah. And my clock like
so that. That as well would sort of like time. I'm just thinking of the old body clock thing and the awareness of time.
But then
and stuff
you have that amazing night when you wake up and you go, oh, it's time for work, and you look and it's like 1 a.m. and you're like, ah ha ha. If you had dogs that stayed in a solid sit stay, and you release them for a reward at the same time every time, and you put repetition into that.
Yeah,
it'd be pretty phenomenal, wouldn't it? Like if 1.5 minutes went past, then give or take, they all were onto that.
I feel a study coming on.
Yeah,
I bet if you remove the clock, or if you remove the watch aspect of it, or whatever it is, the ability to keep track of time yourself, you'd probably find that you yourself would naturally fall into a duration that would become pretty consistent without it actually being timed. You know, I think you'd fall back on that innate ability to be able to, use environmental cues, if you like, to be
able to. Well, it's time for listener questions. Jamie, what's the first one?
I just watched the episode where you talked about the theory that dogs can tell time by smell dissipating. I was wondering how that might apply to tracking and search dogs. Do you think that they can tell how old a smell is? I imagine there would be an evolutionary advantage to distinguishing fresh and old scents. What do you think, Danny?
They're not telling time through smell, but they have a basic understanding of how close what they're looking for is through the how potent that odour is. So you're not going to get a dog, if it's been an hour away, the dog's not going to smell and go into a gallop, you know what I mean? But if they're 300 metres away, that smell's going to be much stronger. It's not time as we perceive it, but they are understanding, let's just say basically, old odour in terms with what fresh odour is likely to produce.
So that would have an evolutionary advantage, wouldn't it? When you're hunting, for example, and say there's multiple animal tracks, if you can smell which one's most likely to be closer, then that's how the dog or any other hunting animal would distinguish that's the direction that I'm going to go in, surely.
Yeah, well, you see it in like lion prides where they're really like lazy about it and they're just generally following. And then as it, and then all of a sudden the crouching and the creeping starts, you know what I mean? It's just an understanding of how far is my dinner from me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What would you say, Jane?
No, I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. I'd say that there's an element of learned association there as well. It isn't something that you just naturally do. You know, there are plenty of cubs in terms of lions, or plenty of pups in terms of dogs or wolves. You know, it goes on to experience attempts at hunting or tracking, you know, that fail.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
really,
it is. But then nature would be a cruel mistress indeed if she hadn't equipped you with the ability to be able to learn from your own mistakes and succeed. And you'd be a short-lived species, you know.
Yeah.
You could go so far as saying, Annie, well, like when it comes to tracking or searching, that dogs and other predators have the ability, which no doubt they do on a subconscious level, to calculate the probability of success, which would include distance, speed, time, to be able to, which going back to where you were saying about the lion or whatever the big cat is, that you can see when I decide it's time now for me to, excuse the pun, now is the moment that I'm going to go for that animal. Why am I choosing that animal, assuming that it isn't the sick and frail one, over that animal? Probably because I have calculated, and based on prior experience, that my ability to cover that distance in this amount of time to achieve that goal will be successful.
Yeah, that's Bob on that.
Yeah.
That's Bob on. Absolutely. It's very, do you know what? What a question. It's very difficult to explain that. Yeah,
I like that.
Sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole the wrong way then.
But were you going down the rabbit hole to fetch your tea?
I could smell it.
Joshua is asking, as my dog has got older, she asks for lunch earlier and earlier. Why is this?
Is she polite?
Does she say please?
Yeah, it's hard without context and seeing it. It's difficult to answer questions like that. But, you know, off the top of my head, if you've fed that dog at roughly the same time every day, and maybe before that time your dog's sleeping and wakes up to, oh, it's dinner time, and now your dog's suddenly sleeping more, it might just be an association. Oh, I've slept. Is there food? And what I would say is just because she asked for food doesn't mean she needs to eat. You know, I want to eat all the time, but there's a consequence for that. So have a little play and only feed on the time that you normally would, and see if that stops. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, dogs' circadian rhythms do change as they age, as ours do, arguably. So there may well be biological and physiological changes why time feels different to the dog, and why that signal that it's now dinner time feels different to the dog. But what I would say is it's really important that dogs get the right nutrition. So you're absolutely right. Just because it's asking for food doesn't mean to say it needs it.
Yeah.
But equally, make sure that it's still getting the right amount of food to meet its needs given its stage of life as well.
I think just as a sort of like a human canine analogy, which I hate, but I'm going to use one anyway. But if you were to look at, as people become older, then a lot of older people will get up earlier than perhaps they would have done when they were younger, which would naturally mean that you would likely go to bed earlier than you would have done in your teens or your 20s. So it would perhaps make logical sense that the same with a dog, you know, that as they get more sleep because they're older and they haven't got the energy that they used to have, you know, and they take their naps, then things shift down the scale a little bit. So you could see those incremental.
Could that even be a dip in energy with age? Maybe is like a little biological urge for more nutrients, for more energy kicking in.
It might be that
could be something like that.
Might be that the dog needs their tea split up into smaller portions, but more frequently because it's struggling to digest them.
Yeah.
Or it could be that your dog's learned that by asking for a dinner, you give it to
her. Yeah, it could just be that.
You'll probably find that she's asking for it at midnight soon enough.
Yeah.
But great question. We love great questions. And if people have more nice questions, Jamie, what can they do?
You can search for us on social media at Dog Scholar Podcast, or you can email any questions or queries that you might have to podcast@thedogscholar.com.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week. We really hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you have, please share it with a friend, because if they don't like it, maybe their dogs will.
Danny, it's time for your final question.
Yeah. Sound like Alan Partridge then.
Did a bit.
So good, yeah. I think he was going for that. Yes. So, maybe dogs do have a rudimentary form of time. One thing we can guarantee is they don't have much of it, unfortunately. They don't live as long as us. So make sure you are making the most of the time you spend with your dog.
Time to clock off. See you next week.